This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Annie Fry Show.
Happy Wednesday. Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. Thank you for tuning in to 97.1 FM Talk, St. Louis's home for conservative talk. You know, I was watching the DNC last night. Yesterday, I asked you folks if you were watching it or if you were interested in the highlights. And I think it was about 57% of you were either watching it yourself or interested in the highlights. So I think it's my responsibility here to give you the highlights, to be able to put you in a position where you are aware of what's going on, but to do it in a way that is palatable. I had volleyball last night, volleyball game, and first game of the season. And so I'm doing the coach thing, get home. I think we got home probably around 8:30 or so, eat dinner. And then it's time for me to retire to my quarters where I have to go relegate myself away from my family so I can watch the DNC. I would watch it with them, but they don't want to watch it. The idea of coming home from a long day of school and work and sports and settling into some political talking points at 9 o'clock, not palatable to anybody else in my house. And honestly, not really to me. But it's important that we do pay attention to what the other side is offering, what they're saying. This is their moment to shine, the Democrats' moment to completely make of themselves what they want their message to be. And last night, I went through a little bit of an emotional roller coaster watching the parts that I did consume from the evening. I did not watch J.B. Pritzker speak. I was not there for it, and it was a lot of times I will watch these things, and I'll go, oh, I need to see that, I need to see that, and I'll go back and watch it, and I didn't do it. I couldn't do it. Folks, I have my limits. You do, too. But again, like many of you said yesterday, I do consume a lot of this, these types of things through the highlights. Let's first get a highlight here from Senator Bernie Sanders, who spoke at the DNC convention in Chicago.
We need an economy that works for all of us, not just the billionaire class.
Now, do I get this correctly? Who was the next speaker after Bernie Sanders?
I believe that was J.B. Pritzker.
Was he legit the next guy?
Donald Trump thinks that we should trust him on the economy because he claims to be very rich. But take it from an actual billionaire.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yay, billionaires!
Trump
the
is rich in
you.
Only one thing, stupidity!
What a stupid line! fine. Man, you tried to like big league him with your Scrooge McDuck doubloons. And you've said Donald Trump's money is fake and J.B. Pritzker's is real. My whole understanding of how J.B. Pritzker earned his money was by being born into his family. So if you want to talk about generational wealth in the United States of America as a problem, especially when from the Democrat position on the issue, we have a racial disparity in generational wealth. And you have Bernie Sanders up on stage saying, and quote, "We need an economy that works for everyone, not just billionaires." And your literal next speaker is like, "My billionaire is better than your billionaire." And it's from somebody who didn't build his wealth. It's from somebody who inherited it. Guys, this is too easy. This is way, way, way too easy. But then, of course, it gets a little more deep in the hypocrisy with Michelle Obama.
"My mom, in her steady, quiet way, lived out that striving sense of hope every single day of her life. She believed that all children, all people have value, that anyone can succeed if given the opportunity. She and my father didn't aspire to be wealthy. In fact, they were suspicious of folks who took more than they needed. They understood that it wasn't enough for their kids to thrive if everyone else around us was drowning."
Oh, okay. Okay. So Michelle Obama is one of her big sell lines is being suspicious of people who take more than they need, but they've got this
Donald
guy.
"Donald Trump thinks that we should trust him on the economy."
Yeah.
"Because he claims to be very rich, but take it from an actual billionaire."
Get off the stage, you hypocrite. Not to mention the fact Donald Trump doesn't think we should trust him on the economy because he's a billionaire. Donald Trump wants us to trust him on the economy because he knows it belongs to us and not big government. Not identifying up and down and left and right every problem that the Democrat Party has created. They show up just in the nick of time to solve only before Election Day. This is what the Democrats do. The Democrats tell you about all of the problems that they identify when it comes time to get elected, but they don't actually solve those problems, because if they solved them, then what would they sell to you the next time around? Do you know how many homes Michelle Obama has? Do you know the value of the homes that Michelle Obama has? Do you understand that Michelle Obama doesn't live a life like you and I live? Michelle Obama does not live paycheck to paycheck. Did she ever understand what it was like to live paycheck to paycheck? I have no idea. Probably. Does it matter to me that Michelle Obama has, throughout the course of her career, flourished economically, financially for herself? These people are absolute hypocrites. They want a system that works for them, that they control, that makes you feel like you're on the other side of some line that you will never get across unless you get their help, because they're on the other side. Well, they run the system, and then they play the system to stay in the system. And the only way the system works is to make money and to build power off of you. That's the way it works. To have Michelle Obama standing up on stage talking about the people who are struggling in this country while she is not struggling at all. You go first, Michelle Obama. You give it up first. Lend one of your homes that you built on a beach while you made money off of climate change speeches across the country and the world. Turn that one over to somebody who doesn't have a roof over their head. You go first. But that's not what the Democrats do. The problem is that they're hypocrites. Yes, there are billionaires in the Republican Party. Yes, there are billionaires in the Democrat Party, but only one of these parties is telling you that billionaires are bad while they, in fact, are that themselves, with absolutely no irony or shame swirling about them. They are cloaked in defense from that because the media laps it up. It makes no sense to me that the media would be so in bed with this type of hypocrisy and this type of gaslighting. I clearly don't understand the media perks from where I sit in this chair on the Annie Fry Show, a 97.1 FM talk. We clearly aren't being lavished with the whatever it is that makes these people so willfully surrender their journalistic souls to the Democrat Party. So you might say, okay, Annie, yeah, billionaires, whatever. J.B. Pritzker, governor, he's not speaking on any stage that isn't in Chicago during this event. But he gets his time. He gets his moment. He has nothing to offer anybody other than campaign donations, which is how you get on one of those stages. Enter Barack Obama, who is the final speaker of the night. And boy, is he good. Is he very good at what he does? And I'm going to tell you this, too. Michelle Obama made me feel things last night when I was watching her because I felt like she was disgusted by the state of America. Once again, not very proud of this country. She just exudes this dissatisfaction with the idea of America. And you're like, hello, you guys got the chair. You got the seat. You got the Oval Office. It's yours right now. You're talking about people not finding hope and feeling the electricity that is in the air in this room and around the country that we haven't felt for a while. And it sounds like hope. That's what she said. Why do people feel hopeless? Joe Biden is the president. Kamala Harris is the vice president. You're saying that people feel hopeless right now, but there's an electricity in the air? You must be selling it. Because it's not real. It's not genuine. And it's just lathered in gross hypocrisy. Barack Obama comes on the consummate orator. And I know that people will say, you know, he's not nearly as good of a speaker as people say he is. This dude connects with his audience. He is capable of delivering a message. He is capable, even though he is so far away from understanding currently, right now, what it's like to live my lifestyle or your lifestyle in the Midwest. I don't even know if he respects it. But when he gets on stage and he starts speaking, he connects to people. He's very good at it. And to deny him that is to not pay attention or to not listen. This is how he started off his speech last night to get the people in the arena going.
The other side knows. It's easier to play on people's fears and cynicism. Always has been. They will tell you that government is inherently corrupt, that sacrifice and generosity are for suckers. And since the game is rigged, it's okay to take what you want and just look after your own. That's the easy path. We have a different task. Our job is to convince people that democracy can actually deliver.
Here you have Barack Obama on stage setting the tone for his message, his delivery, in saying that the right, Donald Trump, Republicans, conservatives like maybe you and definitely like me, we're here to make people scared. We're here to make people cynical about government. Well, yeah, I'm a little cynical about government. When the government shows up to say, I'm going to solve your problem. I go, I'm good. I prefer my problem. Just leave it be. Don't touch it. Leave it right where it is. No help needed. No requests made. Slowly back away from the problem, government. But they act as though when we talk about, you know, things like the southern border and about people coming across who are convicted felons. Only bad, I guess, when Trump is. It doesn't matter if you're murdering people in other countries. Come one, come all. We'll even let you vote. They talk about how the right wants to stoke fear in people's minds. When you point at reality, like reality, we are not living in the same reality. We see things so incredibly different right now. And he makes sure that you understand at the beginning of the speech, that other side, they are just there to make you afraid. We don't need to be afraid, but the other side, they hate everything about this. And they want to make sure that if you are on the other side, that you are made to be fearful, that you are made to be villainous, that you are made to be all of these bad things. So he very clearly lays out what he thinks of their political opponents. But then later on, he does the Barack Obama thing and he says this.
I believe that's what we yearn for. A return to an America where we work together and look out for each other. A restoration of what Lincoln called on the eve of civil war, our bonds of affection. An America that taps what he called the better angels of our nature. That is what this election is about.
Well, you know what? You just started your speech with demonizing the other side. And then at the end you say, you know, people don't really want division. People don't really want to feel separate from... That's true. Take the last part of your speech, deliver it, and that's a speech for America. I understand it. You're standing in front of the DNC. You're standing in front of, like, the most Democrats that exist. They're all right in front of you, and I don't disrespect that. Yes, you're on national television. Yes, you've got the country watching, but this is for the Democrat Party. This moment in time is to tell the Democrats, this is what we're offering people. And in the same breath that he says what people need to hear about the understanding that we actually have way more in common than we don't. We actually all collectively in our own communities don't really want to be so politically divided from our neighbors. There are things that we're interested in that are way more impactful on our everyday existence than the red and the blue, the Republican and the Democrat, the conservative and the progressive, the Trump and the Harris. Barack Obama identifies that, and he does because it's true. He knows it because it's true, but he doesn't do that until he's completely admonished and derided the entire other side of the aisle and talked about how dangerous Donald Trump will be for this country. After his wife goes on stage right before him and mentions the fact that, you know, Donald Trump doesn't really like them because, oh, by the way, they're black. They happen to be black. They had to throw that out there. Joe Biden, earlier this week, the night before, goes on stage and repeats the most obnoxious hoax of a lie, reiterating the original hoax of Donald Trump saying that there were good people on both sides of the Charlottesville issue. Saying to the American people from the stage, Joe Biden delivers the lie that Donald Trump was calling white supremacists good, fine people. It's such an obvious lie. It did not happen. And there is Democrat after Democrat after Democrat who has come out and been like, the Charlottesville thing is not what people made it out to be. It just isn't. And the cherry on top of the whole thing with Joe Biden is him saying, calling out Donald Trump, shaking his fist at the camera, saying that Donald Trump had the nerve in Charlottesville. He says that this is the genesis of his desire to run for president. He said this multiple times. Joe Biden decided to run for president because he saw what happened in Charlottesville. And that Donald Trump was a danger to this country because Donald Trump is a white supremacist. That's what Joe Biden has said repeatedly, and he said again this week. And later in the exact same speech, he talks about protesters outside of the DNC convention that are pro-Hamas, that celebrate October 7th, that are anti-Semitic, Jew-hating reprobates outside of this convention. And Joe Biden has the guts to say into the camera that there are good people on both sides. Folks, the hypocrisy is the only thing that they have. And they're relying on you to not consume the DNC as a whole, to not consume these speeches in their entirety. They want clips. They're playing the soundbite game. They're playing the YouTube short game, the TikTok game, where they can clip 30 seconds of things and put it out there. And if you can say that there are good people protesting in the convention and that clip goes out there, then those people see that and they're like, he's on our side. And then they speak out of just in the next sentence, they'll speak out of the other side of their mouth and say, The Democrat Party stands by its Jewish people, its Jewish members. And they clip it and they put it out on TikTok and those people see it and they're like, that's our party. But if you look at the context, if you look at the full fabric of what the Democratic Party is, they have nothing. They have no standards. They have no policies. All they care about is themselves. And they prove it every single time they get the opportunity to speak. So I'm here to tell you that having watched the DNC and really taking it in, it's like, you know, when you get into a really hot or a really cold shower at first, you gotta brace yourself. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I can kind of acclimate to this. Watching the whole thing in context, these whole speeches in full, I realized that if they had great policies, they'd be talking about them. If they had America at the forefront of their focus, they'd be celebrating it. If they cared about you and your grocery bill or your gas bill or your checking account or your savings account or your credit card bills or the mortgage payment that you can't afford anymore, if they cared about any of these things, they'd be talking about it. But they don't. They never do. They lie about the other side and they lie about their own side. They have nothing. And I think that that's a refreshing message for the Republicans moving forward. That's the upside. We're going to take a quick break. The YouTube live chat poll. There is swirling news right now that maybe even as early as Friday, RFK Jr. may drop out of the race and endorse one of the candidates who's in the race. I'll tell you who that is and what the poll is when we come back. Don't go away.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got Representative Darren LaHood coming on with us in the 1 o'clock hour. He is Illinois' 16th district congressman, a little bit up north. Great guy. Excited to have him on. He's going to talk to us about the DNC. And, you know, I'm very interested in talking to people who understand, like I do, like we try to convey how wonderful the state of Illinois is and how poorly it's being managed. It's something that's really relatable to people here on the Missouri side of the river, because you know the potential that St. Louis has, but it's just like there are people who are committed to driving it into the ground. And you're looking at it, and you know, a lot of people are going, I think this might be a lost cause. But if you care about it, if you love it, you want to fight for it. You want to see it be better. And then to see the Democrat Party descend upon Chicago in celebration of their party and what their party stands for. I mean, if you're from Illinois, you're just like, facepalm, what are they doing? Like, at least put it somewhere else, like maybe in a swing state or something. Maybe the only thing I could think of is they wanted it to be by Wisconsin. But it's just bizarre to me that they would want to plant it there. And when you see the way that the DNC has put themselves into Chicago and how they've managed their presence there, it's just, I mean, the hypocrisy is so, so frustrating to take in. How much of it, Brad, did you watch last night?
I watched Michelle Obama's speech, and I was listening to Bernie Sanders while I was on the treadmill, and I was like, you know, I'm already miserable being on this treadmill. I can't listen to him. So I got about maybe 5-10 minutes into his.
Well, I mean, from my understanding, was Bernie Sanders kind of chastised both sides of the party a little bit, maybe?
In a way. But like I said, I didn't get much into it, because like listening to him just go up there with the same old stale lines that he always uses about billionaires being bad and, you know. The thing that really got me was the part of the speech that I heard, and this is where I was like, I'm done with this guy. He talked about how the government fixed COVID, how the government helped people while COVID was bad, how the government did all of these things during COVID, while completely ignoring the fact that it was Democrat governors using their governmental powers to shut the economy down and put those people in the position that they needed to, that they were in, so that they needed bailouts and whatnot. I mean, they created the problem, and he's bragging about beating the problem.
It's the hypocrisy that is so frustrating to take in. Lawrence Jones, who just is really killing it right now in interviews, he's getting great guests, and he does a really good job of spotlighting people and also pressuring people to answer questions.
So with respect to you, Mr. Secretary, the people that are being killed in places all over the country, they look like me, they don't look like you. And they're upset with the Democratic Party not taking it seriously. You guys sent the cavalry
in. Not taking it seriously.
Hold on, let me finish. You guys sent the cavalry. You guys sent the cavalry in for you guys, for your protection. But the people of Chicago don't see that on a day-to-day basis. What are you guys going to do to stop the bloodshed in our community?
Well, first, Lawrence Jones, nailing it here. If you were in crime-ridden Chicago, 20-plus people shot last weekend. I think there have been 8 shots so far this week while the DNC has been there. It's just started to be Wednesday. When Chicago, this is just a regular occurrence in this crime-ridden city that had to board itself up so that the DNC could come in and in tow all of these protesters and not lose their businesses because of the destruction that was going to beset this entire area. What does the DNC do? These are the people who say defund the police. These are the people who bail out criminals, who destroy cities because they're throwing temper tantrums, because people like Kamala Harris have incited them to, as she said, you know, these protesters aren't going to stop. And then she says, back during the George Floyd, the summer of love, she says, and they shouldn't. And then she bailed them out. This is the party that does this to cities. It is being done to them. It is an active, aggressive assault on these big cities. And it belongs to the Democrat Party every single time. Every single time. And Lawrence Jones is spot on saying to Pete Buttigieg, listen, You're a hypocrite on this. Your party is a hypocrite on this. You want to defund the police, but you've got police all over this city in walls. You've built, think about this for a second. They've built walls of police. And they won't invest in the police across the country, and they won't build walls to protect the border. But here in the DNC, we know what is really important to the Democrat Party because they show you. They show you with the money that they spend, the donations that come into the DNC, what do they spend it on? They spend it on walls. They spend it on barriers. They spend it on police. And they do it while they plop themselves in the middle of a city that they're destroying, in the moment destroying, that has to board itself up so that it doesn't get destroyed by the other people in the Democrat Party who hate the people inside because they don't support terrorists in the Middle East. Who wants to be a part of this? Lawrence Jones pressuring Pete Buttigieg, and then listen to Pete. So Lawrence Jones is saying here, the hypocrisy is obvious to everybody. The people who are dying in these crime-ridden cities, Lawrence Jones says they look like him. They look like black people. They look like black men. They don't look like Pete Buttigieg. They look like Lawrence Jones. This should be a very important point to Pete Buttigieg, whose party plays first and foremost in identity politics. He's pressuring on him, saying, you know, people can tell who you defend, who you invest to protect, what you invest to protect, and what you don't. People are seeing it right now, and it's strange that the black people in the Chicago community aren't getting the same protections that the high and elite people in the DNC are doing. And then listen to what Pete Buttigieg responds here. Listen to him not answer the question.
And for you guys, for your protection, but the people of Chicago don't see that on a day-to-day basis. What are you guys going to do to stop the bloodshed in our community?
Well, first of all, I was mayor of a city that faced that kind of pain. The toughest part of the job was dealing with gun violence, and the most heartbreaking part of the job was comforting or trying to comfort mothers who just wanted their child back. And the big question, I think, for politics, for policy, for media, is who is going to help them versus who is going to use them?
That's literally the question that Lawrence Jones just asked Pete Buttigieg, who is in the cabinet for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. He's in the cabinet. He is at the top. He has been selected to be as important as you can be in the cabinet, in an administration. And he has been asked the question at his party's convention, what are you going to do? And then he recites to Lawrence Jones that it's very important that we ask the important questions. What the hell is that?
The questions she's asking are the exact question any citizen should be asking, which is when you take office.
What do you mean?
Are you going to keep
your promises? Are you saying that mother is being used?
I'm saying that mother is asking the exact right question.
What the hell is that? Lawrence Jones just asks the most important question that people in Chicago repeatedly are asking themselves while they're existing in the DNC version of Chicago, which is, why do they get all this protection? And when the DNC convention leaves, we go back to our 20 people shot a weekend. Kids being shot in their front yards. Kids being shot while they're laying in their beds by stray bullets in unsafe neighborhoods that were, you know, advocated for a defunding of the police by the most disliked mayor in Chicago's recent modern history. You guys are going to get up and leave. And we're still going to live with the Democrat policies, but not with the Democrat assets that the elites get when they're here. And Pete Buttigieg word vomits a repetition of the question that Lawrence Jones just asks him. And he says, these are important questions that need to be asked. He said it. He repeated it in like three separate ways to Lawrence Jones. And I just would like to say to Lawrence Jones, I would like Lawrence Jones to say to Pete Buttigieg, Mr. Secretary, is there a person in your party who can answer that question? Because I'm asking the question right now, and it's clearly not you. They have no answers. They've got no answers. And when you have a black man on a set at Fox News who has been hard on the issues every single time, I've met Lawrence Jones. He came to 97.1 a long time ago when I was on in the evenings with Mark Cox. He was a really nice man then, and I think he was working with The Blaze and with Glenn Beck at the time. He is a hardworking individual. He cares about the issues. He came to Ferguson to learn about what was going on in Ferguson. He is not a sycophant. He is not somebody who gets talking points and rips and reads and repeats. And he's asking Pete Buttigieg this question, a very fair question. And you know it's a fair question because all Pete Buttigieg says is people should be asking these questions. They got nothing. They have nothing. They have nothing, and it's literally killing people. America can do way better than this. Let's take a quick break. The YouTube live chat poll for today. How would an RFK Jr. partnership with Trump impact the election? I said in the last segment that RFK Jr. is talking about potentially stepping out of the race and potentially partnering up with Donald Trump. Does that help Trump? Does that help Harris? Or is there no impact? Need to know what you think on the Annie Fry YouTube live chat. Go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel and you can see us there. Chris says it would help tremendously in her opinion. I'm assuming she says Trump, but she doesn't specify there. Joe says minimal impact, but I'll take any help we can get. Might influence smart independence. What do you think? Are you an RFK Jr. supporter? How would it affect your vote? We'll be right back.
You need to let it go.
Wiggins!
Oh! Wiggins!
No.
No? All right, I won't then. What do you guys want to do instead? This is six signs you
want
need
to get
to
back
say.
To whether or not you're a scrub?
No.
No?
No. This is six signs you need to say no more.
Oh, no.
I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of built-in jokes. Six signs that you need to say no more.
So you might be a yes man.
Or a yes woman.
Or whatever.
And
we're cool
you,
with that.
You need to be able to just, you know, flex that no a little bit more.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that I am pretty good at saying no.
Yeah, I was looking for things that I thought, like, oh, this would be a pretty good discussion. This doesn't seem to apply to you as much, but it does apply to me.
Okay.
And the crazy thing is, I was reading through this article and looking at the bullet points. I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. And then I read the example that they gave, and it's about a fictional woman named Annie. And I'm like, well, we got to do this then.
Is this really about you? Is your alter ego a fictional woman named Annie?
I cannot say, because that would defeat the purpose of having the alter ego.
I'm going to add, though, that as somebody who feels comfortable saying no, I practiced it. I kind of met a point in my life where I had the opportunity to rearrange a lot of things. And so the position that I was in to say yes to everything all the time, those circumstances changed and I wasn't in that place anymore. And in the new place, I just said no.
How did you practice it? Did you stand in the mirror, point it at yourself?
No.
Good job. Let me read a little bit from this article. Annie, I kid you not, this is just what
fictional
it says.
Annie.
Yeah. Annie constantly feels overwhelmed by all she has to do. There are so many competing demands on her time.
Yeah.
Family obligations, mm-hmm. social invitations,
yeah.
work deadlines, mm. household chores, mm. community events she'd like to attend,
mm-hmm.
and the ever elusive self-care. She hates to disappoint people.
Kind of rude.
Yeah. She hates to disappoint people.
Is you can you? Tell that she just really doesn't get around to self-care.
Her hair is always frazzled.
It's that deodorant.
She smells. She needs Lumi. She hates to disappoint people. So even though she's stretched too thin already, she finds herself saying yes to every request, need, and invitation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not you, but that is mm-hmm. a lot of people have trouble with this.
Yeah.
My wife has been in the past one of these people. We've had these discussions. And she
Boy,
ends
is
up,
it freeing when you get over the hump and you're like, no.
And we're there.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
It's like, no, bye.
But it's just by necessity.
Can I donate some money?
I don't even have money. It wasn't
I'll
through
give
terrific
it to you,
practice. It was just, I don't have any time or anything else to give.
Yes.
So no.
Yes. I'd give it to you if I had it.
It says that you may end up feeling guilty and exhausted when you can't bring your A game to everything that you're committed to. Fictional Annie. And then it asks, can you relate
just call her Fanny.
To fictional Fanny? Perhaps Fanny. You feel too overcommitted, stressed, and like there's never enough time. Are you missing the signs that you need to say no more often?
Well, the thing is that you will empty out, and then you'll go into a deficit, and that deficit falls on somebody. And what I determined about 7 years ago is that it does not fall on my children.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't fall. My husband and I, you can take some blows. But it doesn't fall on your family. And if it's got to fall, you know it's going to fall on someone. You just don't let it fall on them. I'll let it fall on me myself before I'll let it fall on my family. So if I'm empty and I got nothing left to give, something else, like, I'm sorry that it's a, that I'm not able to do it, but I can't.
But have you ever really struggled with this?
Yes.
Really?
Majorly.
Okay.
Yeah. Wait, I mean, if you've ever given a lot of yourself to something and then that thing that you've given yourself to, like a community organization, maybe it's a job or something you volunteered at or a church or something like that. I mean, I've watched people in like PTA or PTL or whatever the school groups are, especially in a Lutheran school. I've watched the most servant-hearted people give everything they can, and by the time they're like supposed to be done with the school, they can't get away from it fast enough. Because you just give until you got nothing left, and then people are like, but why aren't you doing this? It's like, I'm done. Bye.
Yeah, it's interesting because we joined a new church right at the same time as we had our first kids. So we've never really been outside of this church without having kids. And the whole church, it was like 10 families when it started. And one of the things I've heard, not just there, but elsewhere, is that in a church environment, I'm not making this just about church, but it's a good example, that 10% of the congregation does 90% of the work.
Yes. I would even, this is a much longer conversation than we have left here, but we can continue it. But I almost would say 10% is high.
Yeah, I would.
It's like taxes.
Yeah. And so when it was nice, because that was kind of talked about right when we were starting this very small church at the time, mm-hmm. which is now very big, that they make service part of your attendance. Like you don't have to serve everywhere. Just do a little bit so that it's not falling on just the most committed people. And we've grown, I think, tremendously because of that philosophy, because we're sharing the load. Now, we also probably have not said no enough, those of us who are really invested. But I like that this article goes into why it's hard to say no. And you can tell me if you identify with any of these. You want to be liked.
I don't really care about that anymore.
I paused on that one because I knew. I was just waiting.
I mean, no. Well, let me put it this way. I want to be, but I don't need to be.
Sure.
Which, there's the delineation.
It's a big difference.
I'm not out to make people mad at me. I don't want to not be liked. But I don't want to be liked more than I want to leave my family hanging.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, and like you said, you stretch thin. So something's got
to
give.
I've been trying to get stretched thin.
I'm actually doing a decent job.
You're standing on your toes.
I'm not trying to get taller. Just trying to lose a little gut.
You should try it.
You want to help all the time. Mm-hmm. You want to be easygoing or agreeable. You don't want to upset or offend anyone. You feel unsure about your priorities, or you feel guilty and think you should always put others before yourself. That's all very, very common.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can say no and still do those things.
You just have to apportion yourself properly.
And if you're around people who are making you feel guilty for saying no, they're bad people.
Well, you may feel guilt sometimes and people don't even intend for it either. Yeah. You just feel that way because, oh, I'm letting somebody down. They asked. I can't do it.
You got to let that go.
You got to let it go. Couple signs that you need to say no more often. You're exhausted, you're overworked, you don't have time, the quality of your work is deteriorating, and you're unfulfilled. Mm. Maybe you feel angry or resentful, and your health is suffering. That would be extreme.
Yeah.
That would be extreme.
But it happens.
So if you are in this position, like fictional Annie was.
Fanny,
fictional Annie. Then maybe you need to just consider saying no more.
Well, and I will add to that too, though, that if you have to be, in order for me to be fully okay with saying no, I have to know that I don't have it to give. It's not like, oh, I'm cool with saying no, and I go home and watch movies and sit by myself and just serve myself the whole time. If I do have the time to, I give a lot of my time. I volunteer and give a lot of my time. But there's a limit to that. And you also have to, I think the hardest thing for me to do, and I've got 4 kids, they're in a million different things, to understand that I need family time outside of all the obligations, and that amount of time that I have left in their childhood to do that is so small that I'm not going to regret missing it. I'm just not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage you to prioritize yourself in the same way. I'm happy to hear that your wife is on the other side of that. It's harder for women than men.
It has taken a while, too, but I think she's getting there.
Is there more to this?
There can be.
All right. Stick around. Let's talk to Darren LaHood when we come back.
Oh, Wiggins!
No.
No? All right, I won't then. What do you guys want to do instead? This is six signs you
want
to
get back to whether or not you're a scrub?
No.
No.
This is six signs you need to say no more.
Oh, no.
I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of built-in jokes. Six signs that you need to say no more.
So you might be a yes man.
Or a yes woman.
Or whatever.
And
we're cool
you,
with that.
You need to be able to just, you know, flex that no a little bit more.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that I am pretty good at saying no.
Yeah, I was looking for things that I thought, like, oh, this would be a pretty good discussion. This doesn't seem to apply to you as much, but it does apply to me.
Okay.
And the crazy thing is, I was reading through this article and looking at the bullet points. I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. And then I read the example that they gave, and it's about a fictional woman named Annie. And I'm like, well, we got to do this then.
Is this really about you? Is your alter ego a fictional woman named Annie?
I cannot say, because that would defeat the purpose of having the alter ego.
I'm going to add, though, that as somebody who feels comfortable saying no, I practiced it. I kind of met a point in my life where I had the opportunity to rearrange a lot of things. And so the position that I was in to say yes to everything all the time, those circumstances changed and I wasn't in that place anymore. And in the new place, I just said no.
How did you practice it? Did you stand in the mirror, point it at yourself?
No.
Good job. Let me read a little bit from this article. Annie, I kid you not. This is just what
fictional
it says.
Annie.
Yeah. Annie constantly feels overwhelmed by all she has to do. There are so many competing demands on her time.
Yeah.
Family obligations, mm-hmm. social invitations,
yeah.
work deadlines, household chores, community events she'd like to attend,
mm-hmm.
and the ever elusive self-care. She hates to disappoint people.
Kind of rude.
Yeah. She hates to disappoint people.
Is you can you? Tell that she just really doesn't get around to self-care.
Her hair is always frazzled.
It's that deodorant.
She smells. She needs Lumi. She hates to disappoint people. So even though she's stretched too thin already, she finds herself saying yes to every request, need, and invitation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not you, but that is mm-hmm. a lot of people have trouble with this.
Yeah.
My wife has been in the past one of these people. We've had these discussions. And she
Boy,
ends
is
up,
it freeing when you get over the hump and you're like, no.
And we're there.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
It's like, no, bye.
But it's just by necessity.
Can I donate some money?
I don't even have money. It wasn't
I'll
through
give
terrific
it to you,
practice. It was just, I don't have any time or anything else to give.
Yes.
So no.
Yes. I'd give it to you if I had it.
It says that you may end up feeling guilty and exhausted when you can't bring your A game to everything that you're committed to. Fictional Annie. And then it asks, can you relate
just call her Fanny.
To fictional Fanny? Perhaps
Fanny.
You feel too overcommitted, stressed, and like there's never enough time. Are you missing the signs that you need to say no more often?
Well, the thing is that you will empty out and then you'll go into a deficit and that deficit falls on somebody. And what I determined about 7 years ago is that it does not fall on my children.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't fall. My husband and I, you can take some blows. But it doesn't fall on your family. And if it's got to fall, you know it's going to fall on someone, you just don't let it fall on them. I'll let it fall on me myself before I'll let it fall on my family. So if I'm empty and I got nothing left to give, something else, like I'm sorry that that I'm not able to do it, but I can't.
But have you ever really struggled with this?
Yes.
Really?
Majorly.
Okay.
Yeah. Wait, I mean, if you've ever given a lot of yourself to something and then that thing that you've given yourself to, like a community organization, maybe it's a job or something you volunteered at or a church or something like that. I mean, I've watched people in like PTA or PTL or whatever the school groups are, especially in a Lutheran school. I've watched the most servant-hearted people give everything they can, and by the time they're like supposed to be done with the school, they can't get away from it fast enough. Because you just give until you got nothing left. And then people are like, but why aren't you doing this? It's like, I'm done. Bye.
Yeah, it's interesting because we joined a new church right at the same time as we had our first kids. So we've never really been outside of this church without having kids. And the whole church, it was like 10 families when it started. And one of the things I've heard, not just there, but elsewhere, is that in a church environment, I'm not making this just about church, but it's a good example, that 10% of the congregation does 90% of the work.
Yes. I would even, this is a much longer conversation than we have left yeah. here, but we can continue it. But I almost would say 10% is high.
Yeah, I would.
It's like taxes.
Yeah, and so when it was nice, because that was kind of talked about right when we were starting this very small church at the time, mm-hmm. which is now very big, that they make service part of your attendance. Like, you don't have to serve everywhere. Just do a little bit so that it's not falling on just the most committed people. And we've grown, I think, tremendously because of that philosophy, because we're sharing the load. Now, we also probably have not said no enough, those of us who are really invested. But I like that this article goes into why it's hard to say no. And you can tell me if you identify with any of these. You want to be liked.
I don't really care about that anymore.
I paused on that one because I knew. I was just waiting.
I mean, no. Well, let me put it this way. I want to be, but I don't need to be.
Sure.
Which, there's the delineation.
It's a big difference.
I'm not out to make people mad at me. I don't want to not be liked, but I don't want to be liked more than I want to leave my family hanging.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, and like you said, you stretch thin, so something's got
to
give.
I've been trying to get stretched thin.
I'm actually doing a decent job.
You're standing on your toes.
I'm not trying to get taller. Just trying to lose a little gut.
You should try it.
You want to help all the time. Mm-hmm. You want to be easygoing or agreeable. You don't want to upset or offend anyone. You feel unsure about your priorities, or you feel guilty and think you should always put others before yourself. That's all very, very common.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can say no and still do those things.
You just have to apportion yourself properly.
And if you're around people who are making you feel guilty for saying no, they're bad people.
Well, you may feel guilt sometimes, and people don't even intend for it either. Yeah. You just feel that way because, oh, I'm letting somebody down. They asked. I can't do it.
You got to let that go.
You got to let it go. A couple signs that you need to say no more often. You're exhausted. You're overworked. You don't have time. The quality of your work is deteriorating, and you're unfulfilled. Mm. Maybe you feel angry or resentful, and your health is suffering. That would be extreme.
Yeah.
That would be extreme.
But it happens.
So if you are in this position, like fictional Annie was.
Fanny.
Fictional Annie. Then maybe you need to just consider saying no more.
Well, and I will add to that too, though, that if you have to be, in order for me to be fully okay with saying no, I have to know that I don't have it to give. It's not like, oh, I'm cool with saying no, and I go home and watch movies and sit by myself and just serve myself the whole time. If I do have the time I give a lot of my time. I volunteer and give a lot of my time. But there's a limit to that. And you also have to, I think the hardest thing for me to do, and I've got four kids, they're in a million different things, to understand that I need family time outside of all the obligations, and that amount of time that I have left in their childhood to do that is so small that I'm not going to regret missing it. I'm just not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage you to prioritize yourself in the same way. I'm happy to hear that your wife is on the other side of that. It's harder for women than men.
It has taken a while, too, but I think she's getting there.
Is there more to this?
There can be.
All right. Stick around. Let's talk to Darren the Hood when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some from my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week, with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app, and wherever you get your podcasts.